Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. A warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening today. Awfully glad you joined me. You have a great show. I also want to mention that next Thursday, a week from Thursday, November 1st, we're having our live in-studio event. That's a live broadcast of Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I would love to meet you. Please go to myfaithradio.com, go to the Afternoon with Bill Arnold page, and you can just click, yes, I'd like to come, get a seat. I think we're stopping taking reservations on the 26th, unless, of course, no one registers. Then we're going to beg and plead until November 1st. So anyway, we'd love to have you come over, meet and greet. It will be a lot of fun. We have a great, great show. Hour one, we have Sheriff Rich Stanek, Hennepin County Sheriff, and also a little conversation with George Fraser, the co-host of Real Recovery. And that's all up coming up next. Welcome to the show. My guest on our studio line is Rich Stanek. He's a Minneapolis boy done good. He's a 35-year veteran of law enforcement, serving with the Minneapolis Police Department, and he really rose through the ranks from patrol officer, and he just kept moving up and up and up, and now he's Hennepin County Sheriff. Awfully nice to have him on the studio line. Hello, Rich.
Hey, guys. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So here's a day in my life. I wake up at 5 after 11, and then I come here to work at 3. What's your day like?
11 a.m.?
Yeah.
Not so much. I get up at about 5:15 in the morning, and I'm usually out the door meeting somebody from the community or maybe one of the local police chiefs at a caribou about 7 a.m.
Okay. So tell
and
me.
And it just continues on. Like last night, I got home about 9:30, which is about average.
Okay.
9:30 p.m., that is, not a.m.
That is that's a really long day, and you're a committed public servant, and I want to thank you for what you do. But I also just – I've got so many questions about what's going on in law today, what's going on in with police. And, you know, just for our listeners' sake, draw the distinction between police and the sheriff's department.
Sure. Well, the sheriff's office in Hennepin County is multifaceted. I have about 1,100 employees,
wow.
800 full-time, 300 volunteers. And our volunteers, by the way, put in over 56,000 hours of service to this community every year. They're really good at what they do. And we have 8 distinct lines of business, which is different than a local police department. And we do all the way from dispatching 911 calls to responding to 911 calls. We provide water patrol, dignitary protection, SWAT team. We run the jail. We secure the courts. And we do warrant and civil process. All of this is articulated in state law, and including state-of-the-art internationally accredited crime labs so we can process crime scenes and really figure out what's happening. So a lot more, you know, a little more robust than the local police department. And we defer to local autonomy. So if a local city has a police department and they can provide whatever level of service they wish to their residents, we add on to that. If they didn't have a police department in place, your residents would have the sheriff's office because the state law will mandate to provide those services to the residents of our county.
Mm, that's awesome. So, Rich, when I think of the way I have always viewed law enforcement, I've always had just the highest regard for people in law enforcement. And I'm just interested in what you can tell us about how the public perception has shifted over even the last 10 years.
Well, let me just give you a quick example. You know, last night I was speaking over at Rasmussen Business College up in Brooklyn Park to about 100 or so young people who were looking for careers in law enforcement. That's important, but it's what happened before I got there. Before that, I had a chance to sit down and have some dinner at my favorite restaurant called Lynn. One, and as I was sitting there eating my dinner, a woman came up to me and said, "Thank you for your service, number one. And number two, I have this check I want to give you." Her employer gave her a check for $25 with no name on it. She was to find a law enforcement charity of her choosing, write in the name of that charity and give them the $25 check if she wished, or she could destroy it. What great generosity on behalf of that employer, as well as the individual who approached me last night. That's public service. That's why we do what we do. People appreciate law enforcement.
Oh, they really do. But there is certainly I see and read more and more about the criticisms that people have, and frankly, it makes me a little nuts because we We desperately need law enforcement, and I appreciate them, and I literally pray for the men and women in law enforcement. Can you coach us Christians how to be better praying for the men and women in law enforcement? Obviously for their safety, but what else might we keep in mind?
Well, first off, you got to know I have a St. Christopher medal in my wallet. I carry with me every day. It's been with me for 35 years through my life of public service as a police officer. Mm-hmm. My seventh grade nun gave it to me.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to carry it till the day I leave this profession and beyond.
Yeah.
That's one.
And that was Sister
many
who?
Many of us are good. Sister Benita.
Sister Benita.
Sister Benita Kordiak. She's great. She calls me almost every day. She's in her mid-80s.
Wow.
She's now retired, but nonetheless, she...
That's devotion. I'm only
going to... She got me into law enforcement.
That's devotion. I'm only going to call you when I get in trouble.
Well, I get calls on both sides, but... You know, what you're asking me is, what's it like to be a police officer today? You know, many of the people we hire are pretty young. I mean, they're young in terms of my standards. I'm 56 years old. I've been around for 35 years in policing. But it's no different today than when I started back in 1983, I believe. You know, at the time, I was a young man, 21, almost 22 years old. I chose a life of public service. I was anxious, and I thought I knew everything, but it took many years for me to understand society, understand people. Now as sheriff, I get to meet all the young people who come work for me, and I hire about 100 of them per year to serve the public as our deputies. And mm-hmm. I tell every single one of them, compassion, dignity, respect are the orders of the day. And we take that to heart.
I love it. You know, if you don't mind, Rich, I'd love to hear your understanding from a police standpoint, the growing opioid epidemic in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, that's exactly what I was doing last night, talking with these law enforcement students about their career choices, but really to their parents about the ongoing opioid heroin crisis in this state, in this country. You know, last year, 175 people died from opioid overdose just in Hennepin County alone.
Wow.
And the year before that, 153. The year before that, 110 people. That's a 59% to 60% exponential increase in 3 years, and it is not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one is tragic. Every single one is preventable. You know, things happen. People get addicted. They got to figure out how to get away from it. And we, as good citizens, right, business people, educators, moms and dads, brothers and sisters, aunts and nephews, nieces and nephews, when you see somebody going awry, you gotta offer them a hand. You got to offer them some encouraging words. And kick that habit.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, we are a community of people that if we don't step up and meet people where they're at and help them past and get through certain rough periods in their life, we're going to end up with a lot more trouble. I spend a lot of time working with guys who are coming into recovery from drugs and alcohol, and it's a cycle, and they struggle so hard because I think their brains have been a little bit rewired, and it gets it takes a lot of persistence to stay sober. Yeah, it's a hard job for sure.
But you can't give up, right? I mean, so often when people get addicted, they don't know where to turn for help.
Yeah.
So we need to help them.
Yeah.
I see families all the time, broken families, sons and daughters. In our Hennepin County Jail, we book 35 to 40,000 people a year who come through the front doors.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's in the best of mood. But not everybody's, a really, really bad person. They get caught up in life sometimes. Those who commit really bad crimes, I got a place for them, and I have no problem locking them up for a good long time to protect society.
Mm-hmm.
But others get caught up in the system, particularly those who suffer from mental illness. And they end up spending more time in my jail because of their mental illness, and society doesn't know what to do with them or refuses to help them. Than for what the underlying crime is that got him into jail to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Rich, what breaks your heart the most in law enforcement?
I think, like I said, you know, I get a chance to go out to these scenes where people die, whether it's a car crash or
yeah.
a dose or, you know, an accidental death of some kind or, you know, pure outright homicide. And, you know, having to talk with the families and watch the collateral damage of those families is really hard. And the men and women who work in law enforcement, just like last weekend, no doubt, those two young women in Carver County who drowned in that holding pond,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's
no,
brutal.
No admission of themselves, yet just think about it. There were a couple hundred people out at the scene. They were family members, friends, clergy. That hurts. It's tough to be a police officer or one of the divers that have to recover the body of those individuals. And sometimes they just don't think about the other side of it.
Mm-hmm. Rich, I so appreciate your service to the city of Minneapolis and Hennepin County. Thank you so much. After 35 years in law enforcement, have you let your dreams go of playing professional basketball?
Yes, exactly what Sister Benita kept asking.
You're about 6'7", aren't
you?
Yeah,
I played a little basketball, but I am about 6'4", 6'5".
Okay, you look taller.
I don't jump very well. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm much better looking in person than I am on the radio
as
well.
Yeah, I feel the same way about myself, so we have a lot in common. But I so appreciate you doing the show, and thank you so much, and have a great rest of the day.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great weekend, guys.
You bet. Thanks. Rich Danik has been my guest. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Get a chance to chat with my friend George Fraser. I always love it because we do Real Recovery together. If you listen on Sunday nights at 5 o'clock, or maybe Saturdays at 3, you hear amazing stories of recovery from addictions of all kind. And George, we are now in our 7th year, and isn't that been a blast?
That's your
key to say something.
It has been. You know, it's been a lot of fun. Do you remember when we started and we'd come in on Sunday nights and nobody was in here except our producer, Alex?
Yeah.
I didn't know who he was. You don't either. And we thought maybe it was a fraternity prank, but then we heard the podcast.
Yeah, it was, we came in, limited us adult supervision, and we didn't know what we were doing, and very little has changed in 7 years.
It's... if you don't believe in God, that'll convert you right there. It's been a blast, and I never get tired of seeing what God does in our lives and all the stories of redemption. And then you think about, okay, if one person gets changed and saved and transformed, how many other people are affected by that? And it's something we won't know till we get to heaven.
That's true. The ripple effect of people that get changed lives, they transform through the power of God in their life, and then they live a very different life.
It's great, yeah. But the return on that investment just compounds so many times.
Yeah. Now, George, I've had a question for you lately I've wanted to ask, and I figured, well, let's just do it on the air, because now you've got a couple of stepchildren in the house.
Yeah.
And you have got lots of experience in recovery from drugs and alcohol addiction, and you've been sober 33-plus years.
34, but who keeps
but
track
who's
of these
counting?
Things? Yeah, it's not a contest,
yeah,
Bill, but unless you're winning.
Right.
And
now,
for today, we are.
You've got a great perspective and set of eyes that you can observe things. Do you see, what do you see going on with things as simple as addiction to electronics? iPads, video games, cell phones, does that go on?
Sure.
In the house, and what do you say to put that in perspective?
Well, you have limited access to it, I think, is what you do. I'm addicted to my phone.
Yeah.
I got to be honest about that. You know, you can, and if you want to keep that addiction going, here's some tips from the George on this.
Mm-hmm.
Put your recovery book on there and your Bible on there. And that way you can still, you know, go to your phone and you can tell people you're reading your Bible and stuff like that. But I look around, you see them in churches, recovery gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we have to do is limit the access. But that is something that I think almost everybody, when I was driving in here and to do your show, and it's not hard to get here during rush hour traffic, we're good enough friends where I'm overjoyed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
When I pull up to the red light, the green arrow goes and nobody goes because they're all looking at their phone.
That's true. And then you have to tap your horn a little bit, don't you?
Well, you got to be careful on that. You want to practice the beep beep like you're smiling instead of the brr, you know, because you don't want to get hurt on that. But yeah, and I think if somebody is prone to be an addict or an alcoholic, you're going to see all or nothing, black or white behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I know growing up for me, all I wanted to do was play sports all the time. But I think nowadays there are so many things that do get us addicted. I'd watch the TV time. Got to watch that on my, you know, my own. I know you like to watch hockey.
I do.
And you can just kind of veg out. But the phones, the games, yeah, it's tough.
Because the addiction can start very simply. I mean, every story we hear of addiction starts with something which appears to the person to feel innocent. I had a sip of a beer. I played a video game. And then there's addictions just blossom from that because of the pleasure center in your brain fires up and you go back to wanting more of that.
Well, and it's escape.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the drug use for me, you know, went with, distorting reality to make it better. I think any time we fantasize and have something that can help us do that, whether it's watching TV, listening to music, being on our phones, playing games, whatever, you got to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you like too much, you have to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm addicted to coffee. I don't know about you, but I think part of the reason I get up in the morning is so I can have coffee.
I look forward to coffee in the morning. It's one of the reasons.
Well, no, you know, you have that thought, I should stay in bed, but
no,
there's a drug out there waiting that's legal.
Yes, and I program mine so it's ready when I wake up. So there you go.
You're way ahead of the curve. I used to do that, but now they're in the house I live in. The other people are up by the time I get up, so I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, so I'd love to hear a health update because I don't know if our listeners know in the afternoon, but if you listen to Real Recovery, you know that a couple of years ago, George was diagnosed with what they called stage 4 cancer, and that was a very scary time. And just curious as to how you're doing, how you're feeling, and what's the latest?
Well, actually, it was stage 4 lung cancer.
What did I say?
Cancer. I mean, and, you know, I'm all in, so if I'm going to have a problem, it's going to be a big one. Cocaine addict, alcoholic. Yeah, you were there when we got the diagnosis, and you were so great about transporting me around, and I remember we went from praying everything's going to be good and we thought it would be to, we were joking. I was on the, you know, the night before my physical on the air about cancer where I was doing it on the break.
Right.
Little did we know. So, yeah, what happened is I got on a drug called Keytruda, which is an immunotherapy drug. And it shrank the 9-centimeter tumor in my leg down to nothing. The lung was 4.5 centimeters, went down to 2.5. I had that removed in August of 2017. I've been clean a year.
Mm-hmm. What's your prayer life like now that you're in this condition of wondering, will I remain cancer-free? What if it comes back? I mean, I know that's got to be in the back of your head because you've told me it is.
The back of my head?
How about the front of your head?
Well, I've always, since I've been sober, prayed for the power, strength, and desire to stay sober today before I get out of bed. Now I've added in the last year and a half, please heal me of this cancer. And then lately, please help me to breathe better.
Mm-hmm.
So I pray about it all the time. But it's really been a blessing in that I realize that what I believe about heaven is true. But anytime I get an ache or something, that's my first thought.
Mm-hmm. It's back, huh?
Well, yeah. And, you know, I find out in another, well, it's 6 months from August, so February. You know, if it comes back, my guess is it probably will at some point, but I don't know that. I'm trying to live my life like I don't have it. Every 3 weeks I go in and get this Keytruda infusion. It's made by Merck. It's an excellent stock, pays a good dividend. I want to put a plug in for my friends at Merck, but it saved my life. And I don't know. But, you know, I should have been thinking about eternity anyway. I don't think we think about our death enough to have it change our life. And what I mean by that is, it says in the Bible, Lord, teach me the number of my days. You know, that they're limited.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I try to live each day to the max and celebrate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess now, you know, I got married. I've got 2 stepkids. If I died and it came back, I would be nothing but grateful. But, you know, I'd be even more grateful if it happened 10 years from now, right?
Right, right. You know, I've heard a lot of people that have a situation like yours. And they say that this is one of the biggest blessings in my life. And, of course, I always scratch my head going, really? How does that work out? But you've had that experience, and I think you've said the same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so maybe tell the listeners about that and what God brought into your life and a allowed you to understand that you didn't know before.
Okay. Well, and I want to go back. When it happened,
yeah,
you were there. I would see Rothstein, and I would start crying.
Mm-hmm. That's a mutual friend, just for our listeners that don't know him.
I love Tommy. But I remember when we got diagnosed, it was terrifying. You were there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know you didn't know what to say. You know, you prayed a lot, but it was stunning. So I'm sitting in my chair one day drinking coffee, and I coughed up some blood. This is after the diagnosis. And I was at my bottom. The problem was, see, what happened for me is time stopped. It just absolutely stopped. And I would look at the clock and go, okay, keep breathing. Just keep going forward. And I never had to do that. The heaviness was so great. And I was sitting there one morning, and I believe God spoke to me, and he said, George. Didn't say it like that, you know. It's more authoritarian. It would be, yeah. Yeah. George, if you knew when you were 27 after three failed treatments that you would get sober for 32 years and get lung cancer at 60, you would have been overjoyed. And instantly that changed it. And, Bill, I'm not one of these people, good word selection there, mm-hmm. that hears from God all the time. In fact, I always question that.
Mm-hmm.
But this came from God, and that changed it. And I thought, I'm going to go on a trip. I'm going to see my parents. And I never really thought about heaven. Mm-hmm. How cool is heaven going to be? I'm going to see my dogs again. I know that's true. I'm going to see my parents. I'm going to see Jesus. And I thought, I am grateful. I've had a great life. I got saved. I shouldn't have gotten saved. God did it all. And that changed it. And then I got better. But the big blessing wasn't getting better. It was realizing that what I believe and what I hope for, I am certain of that which I cannot see because of God speaking to me. Mm. Then that's the whole deal. And you know, now I get more of a platform with guys I work with because it's like they think I know more than I do. But that's something I do know. And I think it all gets down to, you know, Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. I think that's all you need. I think anything added on to that is a detail.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a great ride. And thank you for being there to minister me when it happened.
It was my pleasure. George, you know that.
I still owe you gas money.
Yes, you do.
You had the lime-colored Prius back then.
Back then.
Now you got the good ride. I get, you know, yeah. I don't need a ride anymore. And you got the nice ride.
You used to be embarrassed to be in that car. You just felt like it was beneath you somehow.
No, I always wear a bag over my head when I'm riding. Now, but
all
thanks,
right.
Brother.
You bet. George Fraser has been my guest, co-host of Real Recovery. If you ever, if you know someone that's in an addiction and needs to hear a message of recovery through Christ, go to myfaithradio.com, go to the Real Recovery page, and you can find an episode that looks like it might be interesting. Send it to a friend or listen to it yourself. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Hope your day is going well. If you live in the Minneapolis/St. Paul area, you are having a blue chip day. The weather is spectacular. I'm looking out the window when I can, admiring the beautiful sunshine and the gorgeous leaves and the beauty of God's creation. It's fantastic because I know what's next, and it starts with a W, which is not exciting for me because I'm an avid indoorsman, so I'm really driven indoors in the winter. But more so than usual. But they say it's going to be a balmier winter, which I'm looking forward to. So I want to thank Rich Stanek for coming on the show and George Fraser, my co-host from Real Recovery. So the hits keep rolling on. Colin Hansen's now my guest. He's on our studio line, the editorial director for the Gospel Coalition. I can't have him on enough. I just enjoy him whenever he comes on. How are you, Colin?
I'm doing well, Bill. I'm glad to know you're having some good weather. We've got some good weather here in Birmingham, Alabama as well.
What's the Tempe there today? Is it in the 70s?
Yeah, mid-60s.
That's not bad.
So not bad. Got to say, I was back home in South Dakota a little bit ago. We went from about 85 to 35 overnight. I was like, this is my home.
Where in South Dakota?
Southeastern South Dakota, northwest of Sioux Falls, not too far from about Interstates 29 and 90.
Nice.
In the grand scheme of things. Visiting the family.
Nice. Are your folks living there still?
Yeah, absolutely. My dad's a farmer and my mom's a retired preschool special ed teacher, so they get to listen. You're on the radio.
That's so nice.
Where they live, so they get to listen.
Yeah.
They love your show.
Yeah, so your dad knows all about hard work, doesn't he?
That's true. Tried to instill some of that in me. I just wish I were any good at farming. Man, I was terrible at that. So I had to do things like do radio shows. So we all find our calling.
That's true. So let's talk today about how Christians and why Christians need to be set apart in the world. And I'm always fascinated when I'm in Amish community and I see the Amish, because they're so distinctively set apart from everything else. And I'm not saying that the Amish lifestyle is the good lifestyle to lead, but they're certainly they lead a very distinct life. And I think sometimes Christians, we kind of blend in with the rest of the world, don't we?
Yeah, so one of the things I've been thinking about lately is there's actually a book that I highly recommend. It's called Destroyer of the Gods. It's written by a scholar named Larry Hurtado. Some of it's a little bit scholarly, but generally speaking, I think it's one that a lot of people would be interested in. But he goes and he describes the early church, and he's trying to explain, how did this gospel spread so quickly? How did it become this dominant religion in the Roman Empire? And I was just thinking about this recently with the example of the Amish. Because one of the things that he describes in that book is that the early Christians were kind of the early Christianity was both accessible and odd. So what you see with the Amish is that the Amish are so clearly odd. They're so clearly different. They drive, you know, they're doing the horse and buggy. They cook differently. They farm differently. They worship differently. They do all kinds of things differently. Now, in some ways, that actually is appealing, like what you're talking about there. And I think a lot of Christians are waking up to realize that we need to be more set apart and more different from the culture. But what was also interesting is that Christians spoke, I guess you could describe it as the idiom of the age. They didn't necessarily dress differently. They used the same language as other people. They lived and they worked in many of the same ways as other people. And so Hurtado explains the early church was both accessible and odd. And I think that's a good way for us to think about it. We're going to, by necessity, we're going to be odd because we're not going to believe the same things. We're not going to do the same things. The Amish, one of the most appealing things. Remember years ago, they had that horrible tragedy with a shooter who killed a bunch of children in the school. It was just so terrible. And the world, as they were watching, saw these families pray for the family of the murderer and offer forgiveness. And that was odd. That was odd. And yet, in some ways, it was actually appealing. But I do also think, generally, for the rest of us, we're not necessarily going to sound different from other people or look different from other people. We're going to be accessible. We're going to be in the world. And I guess you could just go right back to Jesus himself, and we're in the world, but not of the world there.
Yeah, so Colin, maybe we should start a new meme. So odd is the new cool. How about that?
Well, you know, what's interesting is, as I was thinking about this, Bill, I mean, so many people, like, you'd think this is a great time to be an outcast or to be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about the ad campaigns, have it your way, or just do it, or believe in something so much you're willing to sacrifice everything for it. So in this way, you actually would kind of think that this would be appealing for Christians, and maybe it is. The challenge is when everybody's having it their own way and everybody's just doing it and everybody's doing whatever they feel like. It's actually more like the book of Judges, when everybody does what's right in his or her own eyes. And the new form of conformity is actually people just doing whatever they feel like, which is not really, certainly not what we're calling people toward and we're called to do ourselves as Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a weird period of not conforming, but not conforming is the new conforming in this kind of strange society that we live in.
Yeah, and if you want to be set apart, do something really excellent. Just be excellent at what you do. You know, there's so many people that, you know, they want to be unique today. And I think, well, if you get, 17 tattoos and, you know, piercings on your face, you're not unique. You just look like everyone else that does that.
Well, and I'll tell people, especially in my church, and they're wondering, how do I start conversations, or how do I help people know about Jesus? And I say, you know what? It's actually not that difficult. Just try refraining from gossip. Try refraining from complaining about your family members, or complaining about the weather, or complaining about your boss.
Yeah.
Just try doing that. Try asking your friends and your coworkers. Just ask them real questions, and stop and take some time and say, "How are you doing?"
Yeah.
You know, I want to, and how can I help you do that? And then remember the things, follow up with things, pray for them, follow up with that afterward. And then when you're tasked with doing certain things in your job, do them well. Show up on time, work hard, be above board in your ethics. I don't think this is that complicated. If you do those things, you will really stand out.
Yeah,
but
nope.
You're not going to stand out in ways that are going to be offensive to people, like you're hurting them or anything. It'll be odd. They might be upset at you. But it's not that hard. You'll stand out. People will start asking you questions.
Yeah, Colin, it's what you say and it's what you don't say. And what you don't say could be just as important as what you do say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just that one, applying the book of James here, just watching our tongues.
Yes.
There, if you're not, I mean, I remember my wife years ago was so inspired at her workplace. It was funny. She was working at the headquarters of an office supply store the same time the TV show The Office was popular. So it was pretty funny. But she was just this Christian man was so, like, she was so admired him because he actually, I think he was going to our church at the same time. She's like, it was so different. He never disparaged his family. He never complained about his wife. He honored his wife and how he spoke about her. But that's just not what we see in the media. That's not whatever happens on the sitcoms that we see. They're always complaining about these things, and that seeps into our everyday life. And so just like what she said right there, just not saying certain things is just marks you out as being so different. And, yeah, it'll offend some people because they always want to drag you into that kind of debauchery.
Mm-hmm.
But other people will say, wow, that's actually really appealing. There seems to be a certain kind of peace that you have and a contentment that you have. And they will want to know where that comes from, and you'll give us a chance to testify to Christ.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about this being set apart and just trying to be, I love this, odd, this idea of being a little bit odd. But ever since we've been a kid, we've wanted to fit in, and we've wanted to be liked.
Yeah, I think that's one of the first things have to realize.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't bother me, but you like me, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good.
Of course.
All right.
I mean, I think Jen Wilkin does a lot of teaching on parenting for the Gospel Coalition and a number of different other places. I've learned a lot from her talking about this. Her kids are kind of college age right now. But she said what we need to do is especially to raise up families that recognize they will be aliens in this world. So she talks about raising up an alien child. And so that's a little bit of that accessible and odd. It'll be like we're on this world, but it's as if we're living for and from another world. We're aliens in that regard. And it's amazing the difference that that kind of tone sets. If you're early on, you're telling yourself and you're as a leader in the family that our family is going to be different. And you communicate that to the children. But I think especially it is difficult for parents among all people because they want their kids to fit in. They don't want their kids to be seen as odd, but I can envision very few situations today where somebody is going to be a faithful Christian growing up and not be seen as odd or not be seen as alien to a certain extent, not because they're just weird or whatever, but because they simply will refrain from engaging in those things that everybody else engages in, but not just refraining, but also they're going to do and say positive and encouraging things that other people don't say. And so that's one thing that I think, especially a lot of us as parents, just have to nail down early on. Our family, we're going to have to be different. Our family's going to have to be different for the sake of our children being able to understand that they belong to Christ. He bought our lives and our eternities for a price. And he calls us then to lay down our lives and to pick up our cross and to follow him. That's odd in this world, but it's our basic command.
Yeah. Colin, every once in a while, it's fun to quote Dr. Seuss. He said, "Why fit in when you were born to stand out?" That's got to have a strong application for the Christian life as well.
Yeah, proverbial. I mean, wisdom there. If we're going to testify to a risen Savior, we're going to have to be different. And I think I think we should always be speaking. Our speech should always be seasoned with that salt of the gospel. We're always telling people about Jesus. But people are going to be looking. They're going to be looking to see if that matches up with our lifestyle. They're going to see if it actually makes a difference for us. And I think that's sort of what we might think of as perhaps the adornment of the gospel, the changed life, the abundant life. Jesus said he came to bring us abundant life. And I think that's very appealing to people who are looking for life in the world, but only finding discouragement and despair. We can show them there's a better way.
Mm-hmm. So we need to be in the world, but we have to have ourselves not be of the world. And I suppose there's so many different ways we can do that. If you got into a golf foursome and after 15 holes, the other three guys said to themselves, "Boy, this Colin guy never tells any of the dirty jokes that we're telling."
Yeah, like I said, it's not as difficult as it would appear. It depends on what neighborhood you're in,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes just simple neighborliness is different. Just taking an interest in people, looking out for people in your neighborhood who, not to trigger you here, Bill, but who can't dig out from underneath the snow, but taking care of them and being able to shovel their driveways or use your snowblower over there on their driveways to help them to get out. Like, there are things like that, that if you live in just a good neighborhood that's filled with common grace and, then praise God for that. But in many places, there isn't necessarily that thoughtfulness because we're all so wrapped up in our own lives. It just is amazing how much you can stand out by simply doing these acts of kindness and thoughtfulness and care. And eventually people do want to know who and what motivates you to be able to do that. And you say to them, I'm not a Christian because I'm good. That's something we always have to be careful of, that we're not just telling people that Christianity is about being good. They're like, no, I'm a sinner who's saved by grace. And because of that, then I'm called to, and I have the privilege of being able to serve others. I mean, just think about this. We're called to live in such a way that we consider others more important than ourselves. How much do you see that in your neighborhood today or at your workplace or even sometimes at your church? How would things be different if we just did, as the Apostle Paul said in Philippians 2, to have in us the mind of Christ, which belongs to us, and to consider others as more important than ourselves? These are big things, but they're not always done like through some spectacular means. It's just the everyday stuff.
Right. Again, Colin, a simple truth spoken clearly. So appreciate what you're bringing to the show today. Let me take a little break. When we come back, more with Colin Hansen, editorial director for the Gospel Coalition. We'll be right back. Colin Hansen is my guest. He's the editorial director for the Gospel Coalition. We're talking about how Christians need to be set apart from the world, we need to be in the world, but not of the world. And so, Colin, let me ask you about starting with the church. What can we learn from what the book of Matthew teaches about being set apart in the church?
Well, one of the things that's so significant about the book of Matthew, just let's just take, for example, I mean, you have the full Sermon on the Mount in Matthew, which is interesting. There's a lot of discussion about that. Some people will tell you the Sermon on the Mount is more or less sort of a long list of things that sound great, but that we're not capable of being able to do. So the real point, and really the only point of it, is to help us to despair and to call out in, you know, for salvation from Christ in that. And I do think you listen about this and you think about what it says about murder. And it's like, well, it's the same thing if you've murdered somebody as if you hate somebody in your heart and you despair. You're like, how can we actually do this? I mean, how does this actually function? So we do need that substitutionary sacrifice of Christ to be able to help us in that regard. But I think one of the things that's just so significant to me is you look at the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes are so incredibly, in Matthew 5 there, they're so incredibly countercultural. I mean, I think we've maybe just heard them in church for so long, and they kind of become part of that religious noise of our lives. But this is nothing less than the creator and sustainer of all things telling us that the world is upside down from what we think. Like, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek. I mean, all these things are just so counterintuitive, and I think we miss some of that significance when we're looking there. But one of the things I notice a lot is that it kind of depends on which church you're in, and I wrote about this in a book called Blind Spots, Becoming a Courageous, Compassionate, Commissioned Church. I noticed that different churches tend to like certain of the Beatitudes, like, blessed are you when you are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Okay, well, some churches, they can get on board with persecution, okay? Like, that's, you know, standing up for Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be some other churches that can get on board with the poor in spirit part or the meek part. I mean, it just seems like we tend to pick and choose the Beatitudes, but there's no sense in which they're being divided. They're all together. So I think we see so clearly from the book of Matthew, this truly countercultural vision for this community called the church, where Jesus Christ is the head, and that his sacrifice on the cross and his resurrection is constituting, is drawing together. This is a group that is truly going to stand out in the world. But we remember one significant thing from Matthew. Matthew is written to Jews. And so these Jews are still, in many cases, they're still worshiping at the time in the temple. This is pre-70 AD, the destruction of the temple. We're seeing a lot of similarities. They're still preaching in these ways. They're still using the same language. Like I said, we go back there to being accessible and odd. They're in the temple courts. They're teaching there. They're showing what this new life is going to look like. And at the same time, we see that, boy, it is so different from what people like Matthew himself, you know, were expecting from things. And I love that also. One last thing to mention there. You look at the disciples, and one of the things you see among the disciples, you see compromisers like the tax collector in Matthew. You see others like the zealot in there. You see all of these different people who have all these different political views being drawn together. Some who believe we should assimilate, some who believe we should separate, some who believe we should fight the government. And Jesus brings them all together. And I think what an opportunity we have in the church who follow and claim Christ as our head to be able to show the world a community that draws all of these people together and doesn't just affirm them along the same lines that the rest of the world tends to gather. So such a compelling vision that we get there in the Gospel of Matthew of this new community called Christians.
I love it. Now, we've talked about the perspective of the church. Let's talk about individualism. And would you comment on expressive individualism? What does that mean?
Yeah, so this is a concept that I cannot emphasize enough, because this is the source of so many of our difficulties in the culture and even so many of the difficulties in the church. Let me give you an example here. So one of my friends, Trevin Wax, he writes for us at the Gospel Coalition. He's one of our columnists. He wrote about this recently. He said, this is what expressive individualism means. It's not going to be the kind of thing that empties your churches, but it will totally change the expectations people have when they come to your church, meaning that they will interpret everything that you teach according to this criteria. Does this make me feel good about myself? And is this affirming to me in the decisions and the choices and those feelings that I value there? That's the expressive part. There's many good and godly things about individualism, but it's that expressive part in there that shows that teaches in this culture. Just think about almost any Disney movie yeah. you can come up with. This is basically the message you're going to get in every single one of them, that you're not to derive your identity from any authority, not from your parents, not from your family, not from your history, and certainly not from your religion. You're on a quest to be able to discover yourself by looking within, and then it's everybody else's job to be able to affirm your autonomous choices from the outside. This is so pervasive in our culture. I mean, we had one of the most popular TV shows of all time, Oprah, that was dedicated to basically this philosophy. So it's so like dominant in our culture. Sometimes we don't recognize that it actually comes into our churches. It changes our expectations of our churches, and it makes that kind of discipleship, that lay down your life and pick up your cross and follow me discipleship, boy, does it make it very difficult to be able to comprehend. You read the Bible, you're like, oh, this is a whole different – yeah, it is. It's very countercultural to a culture of expressive individualism that we have today.
Yeah. Now, Colin, because simplicity is our theme today – to me, that sounds a little bit like intellectual nonsense. You don't think for yourself. You kind of align yourself with values that already exist.
Yeah, it is. It's a pervasive lie. It's a pervasive lie that doesn't work. I mean, it puts you on this treadmill. Expressive individualism puts you on this treadmill that's always looking deeper within and deeper within and deeper within, and it's constantly changing because we can't trust. I mean, the Bible teaches us very clearly that the heart is desperately wicked and deceives us because we're born into sin. But expressive individualism flips that around and says, you are pure and you are good. You just need to discover that within yourself. And if anybody tells you that you're not good, then that's bad. Like, that's the only bad in the world, is to tell other people that they're not good. What this actually leads to is a culture of narcissism, and it becomes extraordinarily selfish. It becomes extraordinarily divisive. And I think if you understood the kind of dominant philosophies of our era as being expressive individualism giving way to this culture of narcissism, it would go a long way to explain why we have the problems that we have today, and the opportunity for the church, if we'll be so bold as to follow Jesus and to wean ourselves off that narcissism and off that expressive individualism.
Colin, we just have a minute or so left, but I would say the world is probably craving a countercultural community.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things we talk about a lot our vice president, Tim Keller, talks a lot, is that we are intended in the church to be a counterculture for the common good. We are meant to be different from the world for the sake of the world, because we know the creator and the redeemer and the sustainer and the future, once and future king of the world. And so for the sake of our neighbors, we're intended to live as if we belong to another kingdom, though as we seek to be good citizens of this kingdom. So, I mean, it's a beautiful vision. It's a vision that's ours in Christ, and I was eager to see other churches to be able to take it up and to see the world compelled, as they always have been, by Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Colin, I love having you on the show. I appreciate you and your passion and the way you think, and you always talk in a way that I walk away with something that I can think about and put in my pocket. So thank you.
Well, thanks, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, and then get on your internal memo at the Gospel Coalition and send Jen Wilkins and Trevin Wax a memo saying I want them on the show.
All right. I'll do it. I'll always recommend that.
Okay.
They're great.
Thanks a lot. All right. Colin Hanson's been my guest, editorial director for the Gospel Coalition. We'll take a little break, and then in hour two, Dr. Greg Borgon is going to be with me. Looking forward to that. And then Rob Bluey, editor of the Daily Signal, be with me in hour two as well. All ahead, coming up on Afternoons with me, Bill Arnold. Be right back. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.